Ever think about like where some of those really basic American ideas come from? Like the whole work ethic thing, you know, the idea that you've got to work hard, or even just religious freedom.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? We kind of take those for granted, but they have a history, a source.
For sure. And today we're going deep on this lecture about the early American Puritans and this really interesting guy, Roger Williams.
Right, contrasting figures.
Totally. And it's not just, you know, history for history's sake. This is about like understanding the roots of American culture even today.
Absolutely. It's about those deep wellsprings of American identity, what makes America tick.
I like that. What makes America tick? All right, so let's jump in.
Let's do it.
This whole decline of Puritanism thing, right off the bat, the lecture asks this question, like, what came first? Did their religious intensity fade out, or did they get so wealthy that it kind of shifted their focus?
Yeah, that's a real head scratcher, isn't it? Like the classic chicken or the egg.
Totally. And it seems like even historians are like, eh, we don't really know for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those ongoing debates. But what we do see in the sources is this pretty clear generational shift, right?
Yeah.
You've got the first and second generations, those early settlers, they were known for being super frugal.
Like hardcore saving every penny.
Exactly. Pouring their resources back into the community, building churches, you know, really focused on the long game.
More about building a solid foundation than like indulging in comfort, right?
Not about immediate gratification. It was about laying the groundwork for something bigger and longer lasting.
Yeah.
And then you get to like the third, fourth, fifth generations and things start to change.
You loosen up a bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
The lecture talks about beautiful homes in Salem, more elaborate churches. It makes you wonder if their focus shifted a bit, you know, as they became more prosperous. Did that intense religious zeal maybe cool down a little?
It's interesting to think about. So this is where Max Weber and that whole Protestant ethic thing comes in, right?
Yep. The Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism.
Mm.
Sounds super academic, but the lecture pulls out this really helpful idea, this worldly asceticism.
This worldly asceticism. Okay, break that down for us. What does that even mean in the context of the Puritans?
So basically, Weber argued that unlike, say, monks who like retreated from the world to live a disciplined life, the Puritans brought that discipline into the world.
So not rejecting the world, but living differently within it.
Exactly. They weren't living it up, indulging in what they considered frivolous pleasures. It was about simplicity, reinvesting their time and resources.
So it wasn't wealth itself that was bad. It was more about like how you got it and what you did with it.
Precisely. And the sources emphasize that this disciplined approach, this worldly asceticism, played a huge role in their economic success. They weren't driven by personal gain so much as a bigger purpose, a sense of calling.
That's fascinating. Okay, so we've got this whole decline thing, but what about the positive contributions? The lecture makes it clear that Puritanism left a mark that goes way beyond just religion.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm.
Their influence is woven into the fabric of American culture. Take, for instance, their respect for lawful government.
Right. And the lecture brings up the Mayflower Compact. Obviously, that was separatists, not technically Puritans, but the principle is there, right? Creating a community based on agreed-upon laws and respecting those laws.
Exactly. It speaks to that Puritan emphasis on order and structure. You can see how those seeds of self-governance really took root.
And then there's the classic American work ethic, this idea that Americans are just like hard workers.
The lecture connects that directly to the Puritan value of useful work. You know, idleness was a big no-no for them. Diligent labor was seen as a way to honor God, and that idea became really ingrained in the American psyche.
Like it's almost in our DNA at this point. And it
Yeah.
wasn't just about working hard. It was about civic participation too, right? Not just being a good Christian in your own little bubble.
Right. Their faith was very much outward facing. They had this deep sense of responsibility for the well-being of the whole community. So this idea of active civic engagement being involved for the common good, that's a strong Puritan thread.
You see it everywhere, even today in town hall meetings, volunteer organizations, all sorts of things. And then you can't forget their huge emphasis on education, the founding of Harvard in 1636, so soon after they arrived. That speaks
Oh,
volumes.
yeah, big time. And the lecture points out their original motto, Veritas in Christo et Ecclesiam, truth in Christ and in the church.
So right from the start, education was intertwined with their faith.
It was central to their whole worldview. And, you know, later on when Harvard became Unitarian, the motto was shortened to just Veritas Truth, which really highlights the shift away from those original religious roots.
It's like a little window into how things changed over time. Okay, so then there's this idea of like a national mission, a sense that they were doing something really important in America, almost like they were chosen by God for a special purpose.
Right. The lecture talks about this evolving into the idea of American exceptionalism. You know, the belief that America has this unique role to play in the world, While the Puritans definitely saw that mission as divinely ordained, later interpretations might not be so explicitly religious, but the core concept, the sense that America is different and has a destiny that goes back to those early Puritan beliefs.
And it's worth noting that, as the lecture points out, Puritanism provided the religious background for a lot of later social reform movements, like the Great Awakenings and the rise of evangelicalism. They laid the groundwork in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they were planting seeds that would blossom in all sorts of unexpected ways later on.
Okay, so let's dig into the heart of their beliefs. Puritan theology. The lecture breaks it down into four main points. The first one being God made the world and God rules the world. Sounds simple enough, but what did that actually look like for them in practice?
Well, it really shaped their entire worldview. I mean, they truly believed that everything belonged to God. And because of this, they saw different stations in life, different vocations, as being divinely ordained.
So whether you were a farmer, a magistrate, a homemaker, it was all part of God's plan.
Exactly. Fulfilling your role diligently, whatever it was seen as a form of service to God, even worship.
The lecture even gives that example of the 17th century Dutch art exhibit in Boston, where different social classes are depicted not just as like random social structures, but as reflections of God's order.
Right. It's this idea that your place in society had a divine significance. And this led to their really strong condemnation of slothfulness and idleness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you weren't actively working to glorify God through your calling, you were basically failing to live up to your purpose.
Which ties right back to that work ethic we were talking about. Okay, so the second point is the Puritan understanding of vocation. The lecture contrasts this with the medieval Catholic view.
Yeah.
What was the big difference there?
So in the medieval hierarchy, being a monk or a nun was seen as the highest calling. Then came the priesthood, and then lay people were kind of at the bottom. But the Protestant Reformation, with figures like Luther and Calvin, they totally flipped that script.
So no more spiritual ranking of jobs.
Exactly. They argued that all honest callings, all vocations given by God, were equally worthy in his eyes.
So being a minister wasn't inherently holier than being a blacksmith or a teacher.
Nope. It was all about serving God through your work, whatever that work might be. The lecture even mentions how this idea of vocational hierarchy maybe still lingers in some modern evangelical circles.
Like maybe being a missionary is seen as a higher calling?
Right. But the core Puritan belief was that you glorify God through your faithful work, through that this worldly asceticism we talked about, regardless of your specific job.
It's a really powerful idea. It kind of levels the playing field spiritually. Okay, the third aspect of Puritan theology is the transcendence of God. So what did this idea mean for them? How did it play out in their lives?
Well, for the Puritans, God wasn't some buddy you could pal around with or some distant figure you could just ignore. They emphasized his overwhelming glory, his majesty, his absolute greatness.
So like a huge sense of awe and reverence.
Exactly. And this led to a real aversion to anything that might diminish that transcendence in their eyes.
Hence the whole no depicting God in art or sculpture thing, right? The lecture talks about how they even avoided stained glass in their churches.
Yep, they saw those kinds of representations as inherently inadequate and possibly even offensive to God's infinite nature.
Which is why their meeting houses were so plain and simple, right? Just bare walls, wooden benches, a pulpit for preaching.
Exactly. They believed that all of life was potentially sacred, not just what happened inside a church building.
And this idea of God's transcendence also includes his power and inscrutability. The idea that his ways are ultimately mysterious beyond our full understanding. And this brings us to the doctrine of double predestination.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Double predestination, the belief that God not only chose those who would be saved, but also those who would be damned. And he made this choice before the creation of the world.
It's a hard concept to wrap your head around. The lecture even mentions this problem of assurance that came with it. Like, how could a Puritan know for sure if they were among the elect?
Well, according to the lecture, the Puritan answer was to look for evidence in their lives. Were they living righteously? Were they diligently pursuing their calling? A life marked by faithfulness and good works was seen as a potential sign of God's favor.
So not that their actions earned them salvation, but that those actions might be an indication of God's prior choice.
Right. And of course, the Puritan preachers played a big role in encouraging this kind of godly living and offering whatever assurance they could.
It makes sense in a way. Okay, the final point of Puritan theology is the priesthood of all believers. Now, that might sound like it contradicts the whole idea of specific vocations, but the lecture clarifies that.
Yeah, it's an important distinction. The priesthood of all believers doesn't mean that everyone's called to be a minister or administer sacraments. Those are still specific vocations. What it means is that all believers have direct access to God through prayer. and can act as priests to each other, offering support, counsel, spiritual care.
So it really elevates the role of the everyday church member, the laity.
Absolutely. They're not just passive recipients of religious teaching. They're active participants in the spiritual life of the community, responsible for each other's well-being.
And the lecturer emphasizes how this focus on the laity became a recurring theme in later American Christian movements.
Yeah, it was a key shift in thinking about the role of the individual believer.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground with Puritanism. Now let's shift gears and talk about Roger Williams, who the lecturer argues is like a key figure in the development of American Christianity. What was his story?
So Roger Williams was born in London, raised Anglican, but became a Puritan. He wanted to see even more reform in the Church of England. Eventually, he immigrated to Boston with other Puritans.
But he didn't exactly see eye to eye with the Puritan leadership there, did he? The lecturer mentions this big conflict over religious liberty.
Yeah, that's the crux of it. Williams held this radical view for his time. He believed that church membership, or even being a Christian, shouldn't be a requirement for citizenship or voting.
Wow, that's pretty far out for that era.
It was. And he wasn't just talking about tolerating other faiths. He was advocating for absolute religious freedom for everyone.
Which was a direct challenge to the way things were set up in Boston, where the government and the church were super intertwined.
Absolutely. And this disagreement led to him being banished from Massachusetts Bay Colony. He ended up going south and founding the settlement of Providence in what would become Rhode Island.
And the name Providence is kind of loaded with meaning in the context of Puritanism, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And the lecture makes it clear that Rhode Island was founded on this principle of absolute religious freedom and a clear separation of church and state to protect that freedom.
It's interesting. The lecture points out that Williams's main fear was the state controlling the church, which is a different emphasis than some of the church-state debates we have today.
It is. It's a fascinating historical perspective. He'd seen the dangers of state-controlled religion in Europe, and he wanted to prevent that in his new colony. So this separation was like baked into Rhode Island's DNA from the beginning.
Now, the lecturer mentions Williams's connection to the Baptists in 1639. What was that all about?
So Baptists were facing persecution in Europe, and they came to Rhode Island knowing they'd find religious freedom there. Williams welcomed them and helped them establish the first Baptist church in America, in Providence. And for a very short time, like 3 weeks, according to the lecture, Williams himself was baptized and affiliated with that church.
3 weeks. So the lecture makes a point of saying he wasn't like a lifelong Baptist leader.
Right. He had some theological overlap with them, but his formal association was brief. After that, he's described as a seeker, someone who continued to explore his faith without settling into any specific denomination.
A seeker? That sounds kind of lonely, especially in that time period. The lecturer even shares this anecdote from Perry Miller's biography about Williams in his later years.
Yeah, Miller says that towards the end of his life, Williams started to believe that he and his wife were maybe the only true Christians left, and then he even started to doubt his wife. It's kind of a sad image, this potential isolation that can come with such an individualistic pursuit of faith.
It's definitely poignant. But the lecture concludes by emphasizing Rhode Island's crucial role as the first center of genuine religious freedom in the colonies. This beacon of liberty surrounded by these more religiously uniform societies.
Yeah, it was a radical experiment for its time, and it really set the stage for later developments in American religious history.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we see this complex legacy of Puritanism, their incredible drive, their emphasis on education, their sense of mission, but also their limitations in terms of religious tolerance. And then you've got Roger Williams, who championed this radical idea of individual religious liberty.
And what's really fascinating is how these tensions between a society built on a specific religious vision and the demand for individual freedom, how those tensions continue to shape American culture and debates even today.
It's like those early struggles are still playing out in different ways. Really something to think about. So if this has piqued your interest, we encourage you to check out the lecture itself and maybe do some more digging into the Puritans and Roger Williams. There's a whole world to explore there.
Absolutely. And this deep dive into early American Christianity, it really lays the foundation for understanding so many of the movements and themes that come later. It's all connected.
It's a great starting point for a much bigger conversation.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
See you then.